Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pixels. Tis the season of many games coming out and many fun, good games. It is the fall and the holiday season, and it started. We have too many games to talk about. We're going to try to talk about as many as we can. We have, I believe, kind of six, if we count everything that we specifically want to discuss, but a lot more stuff. There's Tokyo Game Show, there's Apple Arcade that's available, and the games we're going to be talking about are some of the big releases. My name is Patrick Beja, and to help me weed through the weeds of games is Ed Mitchell. How's it going, Ed?
Hi, good morning, everyone. It's nice early morning here in Austin, Texas. The sun hasn't even come up yet. Or maybe just peeking its head over the horizon a little bit, but I'm happy to be here.
Well, first of all, thank you for waking up at an ungodly hour for being on the show. And second of all, the sun is getting ready to set here in Finland.
Oh, how poetic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I might be exaggerating a little bit. It's only 3 p.m. We still have like 5 hours of sun. So, yeah, that's what's happening in Celestial Bodies news today. Other things that are happening on yet another part of the planet is, or was rather, the Tokyo Game Show. You were at PAX. Is it PAX? Wait, what PAX
West,
is it now?
Yeah.
Prime West? Okay.
Yeah. So you're in Seattle.
You are going to be talking about one of the games you played there a little bit later. But Tokyo Game Show also happened last week, and there were a few tidbits of news. I selected like four games to talk about. The first one, I think, is the one announcement that everyone has been made aware of. It's the Resident Evil multiplayer Project Resistance game. It's an interesting... I want to say departure, but they had the, was it Outbreak, where they
they had a DLC from RE7 that had a also similar escape room.
Oh, really? I didn't realize. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see if I can figure out which one it was, but yeah.
Okay. So it's an expansion on that DLC then, I suppose. So yep. For those who haven't heard, essentially it's a asymmetrical multiplayer game where you have four players bending together trying to fight off the monsters and traps and trying to escape it, as you said, as you put it. It's kind of an escape room. And you have the mastermind, which is another player, kind of controlling the environment and setting traps and sending monsters and even playing as the monsters sometimes.
The DLC was kind of a single player escape room kind of thing. So I guess they just kind of took that idea and expanded upon it. That's cool.
Right. And it is the people who have tried it on the floor have said that it shows promise. It's a little bit unbalanced right now. But even just for the idea, I think it's cool that they're trying new things with that franchise instead of just eternally remaking a new Resident Evil. Between the success of RE2 Remake, it's ironic I'm saying this, they changed it enough that it's a reimagining of the game. Resident Evil 7, which kind of went back to the basics of the franchise, and now this, it's cool. I like what they're doing. Are you into it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the they've experimented with like multiplayer Resident Evil games in the past a couple times to like so success.
Yeah,
but it really seems like Capcom is fully like embracing a completely new way of designing and making some of their games. Kind of the return of Capcom of the old ages, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if I would put it like that. I mean, maybe there is some of that, a little bit of hunger.
I mean, Monster Hunter World is very successful. They have Iceborne out. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. They're doing good.
Yeah, and it was interesting. I can't remember who it was exactly, but one of the producers, a Westerner, actually, on Project Resistance, actually mentioned, you know, we need to do new things because if we don't, then other people will, and they will outpace us, which is, you know, pretty standard thinking when you're in an industry where change and quote-unquote innovation is happening all the time. So, yeah, it's good that one of these big old houses is thinking like that. So I like it. There is a small possibility this is going to be a multiplayer mode in a larger Resident Evil game. And it's going to be beta testing fairly soon, I think, maybe late in the year. I can't remember exactly, but it's going to be in beta test soon. But it might also be its own game. I think that's more likely. Death Stranding. We saw a little bit more of that game. We saw a little bit more pooping and peeing and bathing. And there's more story trailers being shown. And there's some actual gameplay. I'm still not 1,000% sure what it's going to be, even though we've seen like a significant amount of gameplay. I guess this latest reveal didn't really change my opinion of the game, but it still looks cool and interesting. I'm wondering if there's going to be like meaty gameplay. Like, I guess what I'm trying to talk about here is like, there doesn't seem like there's going to be any significant like action gameplay, like shooting or fighting or anything like that, right?
That's the impression I got. So there was like a 20-minute trailer at PAX that they showed behind closed doors, and the only like gameplay that they really showed was the guy peeing and then him walking up to where he met Jeff Keighley, you know?
Oh, that's the one that was shown at Gamescom as well.
At Gamescom too, yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, I mean, yeah, it definitely seems weird. I'm definitely gonna like wait to see reviews to see like people are liking it, but it seems kind of cool, you know. It's kind of a unique, very unique kind of game that I really haven't seen much of otherwise in the industry, you know.
No, I agree. I mean there was a little bit more gameplay in the Tokyo Game Show trailer. It was all in Japanese, so not a lot of people saw it around here or really paid attention. And there might be a bit more action, but definitely it feels like it's not going to be the core of the game. And I'm with you. I welcome that. I think it would be very interesting to see what Kojima can do, you know, if he can make the game fun and interesting as a double/AAA release, probably AAA, without a huge emphasis on violent action. I'd be curious to see what that is for someone like him who has been making action games for a long time. So yeah, we'll see. I'm cautious about the game still.
Yeah.
But he's doing something different, and that's always commendable. Just another mention that he also said there will be a very easy mode, which is essentially for movie fans, which, again, it's kind of his shtick. The two-hour-long cutscenes are something he enjoys. But that's also pretty cool. Like, the game can be super easy for people who don't really feel like they can or even want to have challenging gameplay. So
yeah, so that also begs the question what the challenging gameplay would be too, right?
That's true. Yeah, that's very true.
So maybe there is something more in there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I just feel like it's not going to be a shooter or a brawler or something like that. Final Fantasy VII has been, again, showing a lot. There was a significant piece of combat and gameplay demo. And we also learned that the remake will include... So the combat is modified from the original one. It's much more action-y, kind of a similar-ish to what is done in Final Fantasy XV. And in this one, there will be a classic combat mode. So if you want a traditional JRPG turn-based gameplay for combat, you will get that as well. You don't have to go and action it out, which is pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, sure, it seems like they're taking this remake very seriously, and this is just another confirmation of that. It feels like a full-ish game. I think the questions are more on, like, this is the first section, the Midgard section of Final Fantasy VII, which is a tiny portion of it. And on my French language show, I discussed it with a friend who had some pretty good insights. He was saying, you know, it would cost so much to remake the entire game, because it's so long and vast, Final Fantasy VII, to remake it with the standards of today and of that remake. He is like almost convinced that the follow-ups or the full thing is not going to come out. He thinks it's untenable, especially since next year we're going to be getting the new consoles, so it's going to be even more fidelity required or something to make it new console friendly. Or maybe they could keep it like this, but yeah.
I mean, they showed, for one thing, they showed that in the one of the like cinematic trailers, Cloud meeting Sephiroth, and that doesn't happen at all at Midgar. Mm-hmm. So, like, it seems like they're going to establish the villain earlier than they did in the original game, so that they have some sort of conclusion. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're rejiggling the story as well to make the dramatic arc work better, which makes sense. You know, you say Sephiroth, and I am brought back to a time that was not so long ago where everyone who would choose a name in a game would be Sephiroth or Sephiroth 50. Like, I feel like that stopped 5 years ago. We still see some Alucard names here and there, but Sephiroth, not so much. Maybe that's going to make a comeback with the remake. The last game I wanted to mention is Yakuza, which I don't know if it's a me thing or if it's an actual thing, but I feel like Yakuza is on the cusp of busting out of the niche that it is in the West, kind of like Persona did a couple of years ago. And Seven is definitely being envisioned, I think, for Sega as that opportunity to make it in the West. Again, like Persona, like Monster Hunter, it's a, of course, a series that people know in the West, but it hasn't seen the level of success that maybe it could get. And I think the Seven is a new protagonist, a new city, a very different system. There's going to be turn-based battles instead of a brawler-type gameplay. And it's still the same formula, but I think it's garnered enough interest. Maybe it's just for me, but enough interest that people will be into it.
And I think fans of the genre of the games are excited for kind of a new city, just because the games have been taking place in that same city for the past seven games,
if you count
eight,
zero.
If you include Judgment, right?
Oh, I was counting zero, but I guess if
zero
you
and
Judgment,
yeah.
It's eight games. Jeez.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool that they're kind of breaking away from that. The fighting combat was never like the strong point of the Yakuza games. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see if RPG will kind of slow it down a little bit more. And maybe make it, I don't know, less appealing even, because like if the combat is quick and fast, that you get to the better parts of the Yakuza game, which is just the zany, crazy acting and story and writing and stuff like that. So
yeah, I mean, talking about long cutscenes, Yakuza is that is a cutscene heavy game, but it's all super well acted and the story is interesting. I mean, from the little I've seen, it's a good part of the game for sure. But yeah, so we leave Kiryu behind, although maybe he will make a small show up a little bit, and we play Ichiban, which is, I mean, the gameplay portions were all like super zany, with like one of your team members is this hobo who, I don't know, like he spits on his enemies or farts or something. It's like and then you'll have the super dramatic Yakuza, like life of crime and drama and decisions, a story which is broken up by these wacky moments. It works surprisingly, but so we'll see. I can't remember if we have a release date target for Seven, but I feel it's like next year.
That sounds right.
Next year, early next year in Japan, and then later in 2020 in the rest of the world. It will be called Yakuza Like a Dragon. Looking forward to that one. If I haven't played Kiwami, the first one, Kiwami 1, until then, maybe I'll pick that one up, and it could make for a fun experience. Quick mentions. I did want to talk about Castlevania Grimoire of Souls, which is a mobile game by Konami, of course, which honestly doesn't look that bad. I was intrigued. I don't know that I want a Castlevania mobile game, but I'm surprised that it's kind of appealing.
It seems like the microtransactions are going to be based on like buying characters for the single player, like Monster Rush kind of, and then the multiplayer kind of element to it too. Yeah. It says there's like a story and characters, but I'm not seeing anything that definitely like shows, hey, this is like a fully fledged Castlevania game, you know?
Yeah. I thought it was, oh, maybe there isn't like a full single player story mode, you mean? Oh, okay. I didn't catch that.
It says like take on the demonic horde as your favorite characters from the Castlevania series.
Okay. Well, that could be like you could have a castle to run through in Castlevania fashion. Yeah. And the other one is Shenmue 3, which looks a little bit, not better, but I think I've made my peace with the fact that Shenmue 3 is Shenmue 3. that sounds dumb to say, but I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't even have brought it up. It's still just Shenmue 3. anything else you mentioned, you noticed from Tokyo Game Show?
The Trials of Mana that I, gameplay that they showed off and I played at PAX seems really cool. The remake of the game that never came west. I would keep an eye out on that if you liked the recent like iterations of like Dragon Quest and the other Mana games that have just recently been re-released for the Switch and stuff like that. So keep an ear out for that.
That is a friend of Japan ass game. If you don't like Japanese stuff, it's not for you. All right, let us move on to the real meat of the show, the games we've been playing. There are a bunch, and maybe we can alternate. Should I start with Gears 5 or Borderlands 3? I feel like Borderlands is a little bit more recent slash a bigger game, because...
All right.
Maybe I should do that. Let's not bury the lead. Let's just do it that way. Have you played Borderlands 3? No, you told me you haven't.
Yeah, no, not yet. Okay. We've been in the middle of a move, so we have not had a chance to play the games that I've been wanting to.
It's okay. You don't have to, find an excuse for not having played Borderlands 3. I'm sure the audience will excuse you. So Borderlands 3. Huh. All right. I feel like no matter what I say, there's going to be someone who's going to be upset by it in the audience. So I will start by saying that Borderlands 3 is fun. It's a good game. I'm enjoying it, and I'm probably enjoying it more than I have been enjoying any of the games, the new games I've bought for work, quote unquote, for the past few weeks/months. It is like I actually look forward to going back and playing it a little bit more. I've played about, I don't know, 10, 15 hours, something like that, and it is a good game. However, it is very close to Borderlands 2. And I know that when everyone's been saying that, so I don't think that's, news to anyone. But I think that when we say stuff like that, trying to understand and analyze what the game is, there's a portion of the audience and of the players who are like, well, but what were you expecting? Of course it's Borderlands. And I think that's fair. Obviously it's going to be a sequel to a very successful game in a very successful franchise. They're going to be doing, to some extent, more of the same. So I'm not saying you don't know anything. I think, no, it's fair. I understand that criticism. But at the same time, when you're trying to explain to people what that game is, I also think it's fair to describe it in that way. And I don't think it's unfair to hope or expect some, not necessarily revolutionary changes, but some more significant changes and alterations in a series that hasn't seen a game for, I don't know if you count the pre-sequel, but if you count two, it's what, like 7 years? So, you know, a lot of things have happened in the very popular shooter genre for the past 7 years, and a lot of good things. And it, again, it would be unreasonable to expect that Borderlands 3 gets, would learn some lessons from that. It doesn't have to. Clearly, as I said, it's a fun game. I'm enjoying it. It is, it's really a good video game. But I also think it's not unfair to discuss and wonder about that aspect of it. So yeah, that's my thoughts on that.
So how's the loot system in the game? Because a lot of people complain that Borderlands 2 had like too many guns, like you were replacing guns constantly. How has that improved, or has it?
It's not, not really. It's the same. It's Borderlands. I think like any question you could ask me, I would answer it's Borderlands, and that would be accurate.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like the majority of the fan base just wanted kind of more Borderlands, wanted to be back in that world and enjoying that the story there and the humor and the and all that. So, I mean, I think you're not going to turn anyone off that really liked the first two games by saying it's more Borderlands, no. Right?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's great. And I think it's also a little bit in part explained by Gearbox having come off the very difficult release of Battleborne. There you go.
Battleborne,
which they invested heavily in and came out, what was it, 2015, roughly in parallel of the Overwatch beta. And there was Paladins and a bunch of other games that were kind of channeling that thing that was happening in the industry at the same time. And of course, there were winners and losers. And the biggest loser in that was probably Battleborne. So they wanted to play it safe. And I completely understand that. And that is a very understandable move. To talk a little bit more about some of the sticking points or things that work or don't work, I was very apprehensive of the humor in the game. I've said on this show many times, I think it's played out. You know, it was funny in 2012, 2010, whatever, Claptrap being Claptrap. It's kind of the same thing again. You know what? I like it. I'm very surprised. I mean, it's not like I think, oh, this is the funnest thing ever, but I find myself constantly grinning at the dumb 6-year-old frat house type of humor, which I don't know. I went in fully expecting that it wouldn't work for me. And it's just, I'm grinning. I'm like when Vaughn is going like, yeah, bro, I'm not even going to try. But it makes me laugh. Another thing which I really appreciate, so far, I've played, as I said, maybe 10, 15 hours. All of the important characters are women. Lilith is the main ally. The main antagonist, actually, there are twins, but the sister is the one that is most prominent, at least for now. And I love the fact that even a quote-unquote lowbrow series like Borderlands is doing this. And it also, I think, shows that it can be done without even the angry gamers getting upset about it, because I don't think anyone even notices anymore. So it kind of, again, contradicts a lot of what the people who were revolting about this intent initially a few years ago were saying. It was like, oh, and it will change the games and bastardize the artistic intent, whatever. No, this, and it's going to be less badass. But no, it works perfectly well. And I appreciate that for a game. I didn't expect it either. So that was cool. The gunplay is where I think the game shows its age the most, or maybe not shows its age, but or It might be that, but it might also be that's just how the game feels. I think, so to an extent, every gun feels a little bit similar. Like the pistols, the handguns feel like machine guns because they have full auto. Like when I get a shotgun, I expect to feel the weight of the shotgun. And shotguns still mean you need to empty, like, I don't know, you have to shoot enemies 10 times, 15 times to get them down. Sniper rifles. I got my first sniper rifle and I was like, oh my God, finally, I'm going to aim, shoot, and destroy. And it's like, again, you need to shoot enemies 5, 10, 15 times to kill them, even with a sniper rifle. So that feels a little bit weird. I guess it's Borderlands E, but the guns don't feel different enough for me. There's still great variety and it's super fun, like to reload, it throws the gun and it sets up at a turret as a turret or bounce it around shooting everything, or you can, on some guns you can shift the fire mode and you don't shoot the bullets anymore, you then have a couple of shots or five shots or one shot of a rocket or something like that, mini rocket. It's got some good and bad sides, but the gun feel, which is what you're doing all the time in that game, it's a looter shooter, so you're shooting all the time, I think has aged. And with games like, of course, you know, Destiny is essentially the prime example there because it's Bungie and they really know what they're doing for that. But it's not just that. You have games like Doom, the one from 2016, that has come and kind of improved on those feelings, and a bunch of other games. We could be mentioning more. And Borderlands still feels like, again, what it was a few years ago. So that kind of weighs it down a little bit for me. Mm-hmm. And there are other small issues, which I'm not going to get into because it's not huge, but the gunplay, like I never got in those 10 hours a gun where I was like, holy crap, now we've arrived, like I have one or two levels worth of using this gun, which is going to feel incredibly satisfying. It's always like, oh my God, now I've shot that thing so much I don't have ammo anymore, like I've run out of ammo every other maybe it's because I should get good and actually hit the targets, but I've heard that from other people as well, so it's not
I know what you're talking about. I remember when I played Borderlands having to shoot a lot. I don't really remember there feeling that much of a, like, I remember feeling there was a difference between a shotgun and a sniper rifle.
Well, there is, of course. It's just that it's not like when you get a shotgun in Doom, for example, it's like boom, and the thing explodes. Here it's like boom, 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 boom. Ah, okay, finally you're dead. And it's like, it doesn't feel, but overall, honestly, overall, it is a good game. I'm having fun. I'm going to keep playing. So don't take everything I've said as meaning that this is not a good game. And this is probably exactly what Gearbox needed. I hope they can do other things in the future with other franchises more successfully than they have with Battleborn. So Borderlands 3, those are my impressions. I'm, again, as I always say, very happy for the people who are enjoying it. So why don't we alternate and you talk about a game I have played a huge amount of over the summer, Fire Emblem.
Yeah, so I've been, I've gone in deep, Patrick. I might need some help. Okay. So this game is, firstly, incredible. I have played, I think, like 50 hours of it. I am past the time skip, but I'm still at the part where I'm still like going through kind of the couple missions before the end. I chose Black Eagles as my house. And I get really obsessive over class systems, especially I like to plan out perfectly where my characters will end up in their class systems. And this game is like perfect for that.
Oh, I took notes. I had
I have a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
So I have been a fan of Fire Emblem since the GBA games. I played Every single one that's came out, maybe not all of them to completion, but I've at least dabbled in them. I have played. I played the Japanese only Ceiling Sword game that that was like the one before the first one that came west.
Okay,
that had Roy in it, you know, from Smash. And man, I love these games, and I love how complicated the class systems have gotten since those GBA games, where you get the some branching choices and stuff like that, but. I kind of was not a big fan of Fates, the most recent like main release that wasn't a remake. And most of that was because of all the like romantic stuff that happens. I have been a focus on Awakening and Fates, but now they kind of stepped away from that. And instead, like, your focus on characters is not so much about getting them together and making babies, but now it's more about, hey, I think this person will be really good at swords and will become a great sword master. So I'm going to focus their goal on swords the entire time. And there are characters that like have affinities for swords versus affinities for magic and stuff like that. And what's really, really cool is the budding talents, the ones with the stars, that if you really focus on them, they'll become good at it. So like the best example is Ferdinand, my lance user. If you focus on heavy armor for him, he can become a really powerful, like, great knight, for example, because he's already a rider. He has focus on lances, and if you focus on heavy armor, he'll be able to be a really strong, powerful armored unit, but also on horseback. So just the ability to kind of, like, be a teacher, because you're a teacher in this game, and say, like, hey, I think that you will be really good if you focus on this thing, even though you're bad at it right now, and turn that into a user or a character who is just excels at the one class that they are kind of niched for, is super satisfying to me. And it's great to kind of be back, like Fire Emblem's back, baby. Like, I love this. I love this series.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I have two questions for you, though. One specific class, one character that becomes a specific class is not going to be that different from another character that also becomes that class. At least that's how I felt playing it.
Because they're all powerful enough to destroy units or what?
No, because it just, the class has the same abilities and the same characteristics and health points and everything. And so in that sense, it kind of not took away, but it was like that character I could force through the budding talent thing and make them into that class, but that other one is already suited for it, so why would I? You know, that there's a little bit of that, even though I did it in a couple of cases. And the other thing is, I'm past the midpoint, I think halfway past, so almost three quarters, almost to the end. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, I fell off it after 40 hours of game time. And I was like, dude, like, this is too long. That game was too long. It was, and I became so powerful that I'm killing everything in one go, which I don't mind all that much, actually, but it's just I have to finish it. And at that point, I'm like, yeah, I'll finish it at one point. But if it had been half as long, it would have been just as good.
Are you playing on normal or hard?
Yeah, I was so afraid that it would be too hard because the legend around Fire Emblem is, you know, that it's really hard, that I played on normal, casual. And I found that.
I found that the hard mode in this game is easier than the previous hard modes.
Right. So maybe I should have played on hard. But even then, you know, it wouldn't have changed the fact that I might have spent 50 hours in it instead of 40 to get to this point. And that wouldn't have helped. I felt like it was too long and repetitive. And I loved it so much to that point. But then, yeah.
I think obviously what takes up the most time is like the between battle stuff. Yeah. When, like, basically I've just gotten to this cadence of exploring the monastery the first week, talking to everyone, and that usually takes about an hour to do, right?
Yeah.
And then the second and third weeks, I basically just do battles. And the battles, at least at the part of the game that I'm at now, a lot of the like extra battles or special battles that you can get into are me than my characters.
And are so what? Sorry, bit, you broke.
They're up. Higher leveled.
Okay.
The enemies are higher leveled, so it's a little bit more of a challenge. I can't just like throw my units against the against a never ending onslaught of enemies, right?
Mm. Oh yeah, that is not the case for me. So I out-level everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of flipped between like these harder levels that get the challenge kind of juice flowing, and then the story levels, which I'm quite enjoying the story. I'm very interested in kind of the what's happening. So yeah. That alternation kind of helps keep me from being burnt out. I will say that I do like I have like put it down and then picked it up and then played like a chapter and then put it down. So it's not like something I'm continuously playing. It's more like piecemeal. Every once in a while, I'll pick it up and play a chapter or so.
Yeah.
Because the chapters are very long, which is a complaint that I've had about the recent Fire Emblem games in general. There's just so much stuff to do in between battle that are like, that's like not super satisfying that the, you get burnt out really quickly. Mm. But I feel like the moment to moment gameplay, the planning gameplay of between battles in this game is by far better than the stupid stuff you used to have to do in Fates where you're running around the castle and doing, picking up useless items that don't actually do anything and stuff like that.
I agree that the alternating between the battles and the school is what kept me, like I actually enjoyed it, kept me from being burnt out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that part. And I mean, I spent 40 hours on this game during my holiday, my vacation, and I would not have done this if it wasn't enjoyable. So it's just that
yeah.
At the end, I'm like, well, I'll finish it like on the plane. I have some travel coming up at some point. I'm not burning to finish it.
I didn't answer your other question though about the class system. I enjoy the making a very diverse set of classes in with my characters. So I'm kind of like, hey, this guy needs to focus on being a paladin and a great knight, you know. This guy needs to focus on being an assassin and a wyvern rider, you know. So like that but when you get those class mastery skills and then you class change to another thing, you can kind of like have some pretty cool combination of skills and abilities that turn into some really overpowered combos.
Yeah, I guess maybe I don't have to do that all that much because I'm in easy and out leveling everything, so
right.
Maybe I don't get that enjoyment out of it. So
right.
All right, let's switch again. I'm going to talk about Gears 5. A lot of what I said about Borderlands 3 applies here as well. And I feel like this is going to be a much shorter version of the same discussion. I haven't finished the game. I'm about midway through. And I was hoping it would be more than it is. It is still very much Gears, which... Again, for people who are looking for that, and there are many, many of them, this is great. I haven't played co-op, which is one of the fun parts of Gears, so that's also keep that in mind as I'm talking about it. But like the first act, it's usually four acts in Gears games. The first act could have been the last act of Gears 4. It's like mind-bogglingly similar. It's exact like nothing changes. You go from one to the next and it's the direct continuation. And I know because I've played Gears 4 this summer, so I've done it recently. After that, it changes, opens up a little bit. The acting feels a little bit better done. The story is a little bit more interesting. I was hoping it was going to be a lot more interesting. But aside from that, there are a few gameplay tweaks, like the structure of the game. At some point, it opens up in Act 2, and you get into a quote-unquote open world type place. But it's really a very shallow structural change, because it's not like you do stuff in the open world and have like quests or something you do within the open world. The open world is essentially a hub where you have... let's say per section of that part of the world, three things you can go do, and each of those things is essentially a Gears level in the same narrow, continuous, map design. So it is open world only in appearance, but nothing about the gameplay or the structure of the game makes it open world. So it's still, you know, again, a Gears game. It's probably one of the best Gears games there has been, but it's still very close to the structure of that formula that was established over 10 years ago now, which, you know, same criticism / positive aspects of that I was talking about in Borderlands. And just to, you know, I think it's, again, fair to say, oh, but that's what people want, fans want. But I also think, and this, again, applies to Borderlands 3 as well, I think there are ways of making a game that is a sequel with changes that move it forward. Like, I was, for some reason, there are rumors about the new Arkham game, Batman Arkham game, being announced fairly soon. And that made me think, look at Arkham 1 and Arkham City, you know, Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. Yeah. City is additive in every way. Like, even it's not just the city that opens up. Even in gameplay, you keep all of the abilities you had in Asylum, but you add a lot more abilities that, you know, change if you want the way you play while staying very true to the spirit of the original. And I, this is the example that jumped to me now, but there are, I mean, we talked about Fire Emblem. That's another example where the series has gone through many changes while staying true to its core, mostly. So to the people who say, oh, but that's what we want, that's what the fans want, yes, I hear you, but also it's possible to give the fans what they want while moving the series in a right, you know, direction. It's a little bit more risky, I understand, but it's possible. So in that spirit, again, I don't think it's completely fair for people to say, you know, to dismiss the acknowledgement of this is very similar to the original game, especially in series that are over 10 years old. So, all right. And that rounds up my the way I feel about old games being new and cool again, or new old games that are cool, whatever. Yeah. So Gears 5, it's a great Gears game. If you enjoy Gears, go play it. If you've never played Gears and you want to know what Gears is, check that one out. It's very easy to jump into, and you will have a good time, probably. If you have played Gears and know Gears and aren't a fan or want something a little bit different, this is not for you.
Man, people are like really high on this game. They're saying like it's doing things that are different, but you're not saying that, and maybe it's a little bit later in the game. I don't know.
I mean, it's possible. Again, I'm midway through. I would argue, yeah, if you have to wait like half the game to see something significantly right, different, I think it's an example of people who are very much into the game will notice small changes that will bring them a lot of things. That's not what I'm talking about. Like, if you're looking at, I don't know, World of Warcraft, most expansions doesn't change much, but the people who are into the game will tell you, oh my God, this is so different and this feels different, because the minute changes are more apparent to them because they're so into the game. If you have a game like, I would argue Diablo, from Diablo 3 to Reaper of Souls, it changed a lot of things to the point that the game felt different enough, right, structure-wise, gameplay-wise, that it would be, you know, a significant difference. There are a lot of examples. If you go from Destiny 2 to Destiny 2, I don't know. Well, actually, maybe Forsaken changed. Well, not really. It didn't change a lot. It was great, but it didn't change a whole lot.
Or what about Destiny 1 to the first expansion, the first big expansion of that? That was kind of an example that people said.
It was very significant, but I think it was fixing issues, not bringing and making the existing qualities shine better, but it wasn't changing the core of the game. So even then, I would say it's similar to what, you know, Gears 4 and Gears 5 have done for the series. Right, and people would say, oh, but look, you love Destiny and you say how much you love it all the time. Oh, aren't you a hypocrite? And no, because I'm always saying, you know, when Destiny changes in those small ways, it's not a game for you if you already didn't like it before. I think Forsaken did great things for the structure of the game, but if you hated Destiny, you're still shooting enemies in the same way. So it's that same parallel, I guess. All right. Ed, tell me what Superland is.
Yeah, so this is from the makers of a game called Super Ball. And I would say that game you don't really have to worry about playing or whatever to play this at all. It was kind of like a cool sports ball kind of game. But this game is a Metroidvania first person or first person Metroidvania game. But it's the way it's kind of laid out is you start as this, like, basically you're a little 3D stick figure that is in a sandbox that's controlled by like this kid, and you get different abilities to be able to traverse the world, but it's also heavily puzzle based. So I'm playing this like I play most of, like, my favorite genre is first person puzzlers, and so I'm playing this very much with the enjoyment of those kinds of games. So it's kind of like somewhat hard to describe, but basically the idea is that you are going from, you're kind of exploring this world and you have to go get the magical MacGuffins that allow you to do new, basically do new things. So you have two MacGuffins that you unlock, the red one and the purple one. And the red one allows you to shoot like a gun. And then the purple one allows you to draw beams that from wooden things, for example. And so from one wood thing to another wood thing, and then you can walk up the beam that you create. So you can see kind of how
puzzle.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah. And traversal. So you can kind of see how the world can kind of change based off of that. You get the ability to drop a cube on the ground, which can weigh down buttons and stuff like that. So it's pretty clever. The puzzles that it uses, some of them are kind of pretty easy, some of them are tougher, but it's very much like, and the game is very clear, like if you walk up to a puzzle and you don't have all the things you need to solve the puzzle, there's like an NPC nearby that'll say like, oh, you don't have all the things to solve this puzzle yet, come back later. So you're not like completely frustrating yourself just by looking at it and saying like, what am I missing, when it turns out you're just missing an item that you haven't gotten yet. So yeah, I mean, it's strongest Metroidvanias of this year. If you're interested in those kind of games, then I would give it a shot, because it's it really is a cool experience and very satisfying once you figure out the puzzles, and just a cool little world to kind of explore. Every once in a while, you can look up in the sky and you see the kid like looking over you, which is kind of creepy, but.
It's out. It came out in April, so it's not.
Yeah,
and it's Steam. Is it Steam only, or is it
consoles? That's a good question. I think it is just Steam.
Okay, it seems so. Yeah. All right. Well, Superland. It actually looks kind of good. Very nice.
Yeah, and then this Kickstarter for Superland 1 like did not do very well at all. Like he said, it failed miserably. But Superland 2 funded like immediately, so that kind of shows you like how much of a following this game has now.
Very nice. Although I'm on the Kickstarter page and it's like 30,000 euros, the Kickstarter, for Superland 2. I'm always suspicious of Kickstarters that want to fund games and that raise like a few thousand, a few dozen.
Yeah,
thousands,
so this is one. This is one guy.
Okay. Oh wow. Okay.
And he is hiring like some additional talent for the second game to help with like animation and stuff like that. But the first game was made entirely by one guy.
Okay. Interesting. Well, I mean, obviously, especially if you're an indie, you're not going to not take 30,000 right. bucks. And he's German, so I don't know what that means, but maybe it has significance. The last thing I wanted to talk about, and that's going to be relatively short. Modern Warfare had a beta, multiplayer beta, in like this weekend. And I played it for a little bit. And I feel like this is a theme for this episode. It is Call of Duty. It's kind of fun. It feels like there are more ways to play in multiplayer than there were before. But it definitely feels like Call of Duty. I would spawn, like get shot from somewhere. I have no idea, because obviously the people playing the beta are probably people who have been playing for a long time, who are excited about the new game, and multiplayer especially is something where expertise plays a big role. It was the standard modes, not the 2v2 mode. I think that was earlier, but it feels like Call of Duty, which feels pretty good as shooters go. And the modes are, I felt, more refined than they were when I played them last, which is admittedly a long time ago. It's been years. But it feels like the, you know, mode design, map design, it's smaller maps when they need to be smaller. There are modes that have players congregate in one spot and then spread out again and then congregate again. It's like, it feels like the incremental changes over the years for yearly releases have added up to something a little bit more significant than I would have expected. Mm-hmm. But it's still very much Call of Duty, at least in this multiplayer mode. So yeah, I think, you know, it's fun. I'm still curious about what the single player is going to be and those early controversies about how violent it's going to be and if it's going to manage to do something with it or just be violent for the sake of violence and buzz. But
Patrick, I think you should stop playing sequels.
But I love sequels. I'm very much looking forward to Doom, which one is it? Eternal? Immortal?
Doom Eternal, yeah.
Eternal. Immortal is Diablo on phones. I'm looking forward to Destiny. You know, in October we have Shadowkeep coming. It's not a criticism per se. It's just, well, I guess it is. I'm not being truthful. It is criticism, but also the acknowledgement that for people who love those things, then it's great. And I'm in some games, in many games, one of those people, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I just thought popped into my head now, Mario and Zelda from year one of the Switch were true to the spirit, but reinvented the series. It's possible. It's just that many games don't do it, which is not a cardinal sin. It's just, it speaks more to the fans that are already there. And sometimes it's also interesting when things are done differently. I feel like I've said this 15 yeah. different ways in the past hour, but yeah. Right. Do you want to call me out on my BS again anymore about old
no,
games?
Just wait till the end of the show and then we'll touch on it again.
Excellent. Stormlands VR.
Yeah. So this is a Oculus exclusive VR game from the makers that brought you Spider-Man and Spyro. Like, it's Insomniac, right? Sunset Overdrive. So this game is kind of cool. You play like as a like humanoid robot, and the controls are, if you've played No Man's Sky VR, it kind of works similar to that. You have the right stick, instead of turning you, like snaps you into 8 different directions, kind of the 4 cardinal directions plus the ones in between, right?
Yeah. So like 45 degrees increments of turning.
Yeah. So you're in but you're really just using the left and right sticks to kind of turn the body, and you actually also turn your body to turn yourself. And so you use the right stick to aim. But what's cool is that it's all kind of based in reality, I guess you could say, as far as like the shooting and stuff. Like, you have your guns on your body, and so you have 3 places where you put your guns. It's on your left side, your right side, like your 2 hips, and then behind you. And so the way you actually pick up the guns is you move your hand over to your hip, your actual physical hip, grab the gun and pull it out. You reach behind you and you grab the gun, pull it out. The way the mechanics work is that you have a shield on your left arm, and then on your right arm you have the gun, or you can switch if you're left-handed. And you shoot. You can shoot with the shield up, or you can use your left hand to grab onto the gun and turn it into some other gun. So you have a minigun it's kind of like a just kind of general assault rifle, maybe a shotgun kind of feel, and then you put your hand on the top of it and you hold it with 2 hands, and then it turns into a full-fledged minigun that you're like spraying bullets everywhere. There's a sniper rifle where it's just like a single shot rifle, but then when you put your hand underneath it, it pops out a scope that you physically can pull up to your eye and then look through, you know. So it's kind of like a cool different experience. You can have grenades that you can accidentally forget to throw, and it'll blow up in your hand, you know, but you actually have to physically throw it in order to get it to work. Right.
It feels like interesting uses of VR that I guess are gimmicky on paper, but actually work in actual use.
I mean, it reminds me a lot of, obviously, of Super Hot VR, where you're like throwing ninja stars and shooting guns. It feels very similar to that. It just looks way better. Not the Super Hot look bad, but like, you know what I mean? It's like, looks like you're in a real world and you're shooting, like real enemies that have detail and stuff like that. So, I mean, it was a super, I played for about 30 minutes. I was standing up the entire time. I realized as I was walking away that my right knee was locked the entire time. So I was walking out of the booth, I was like hobbling like an old man.
It probably means you had fun.
I had a lot of fun. I played a co-op mission with another guy who was in the booth, so we kind of were able to talk and chat, and he kind of showed me around. He actually lost connection and I was playing by myself towards the end of it, and I was like kind of aimlessly lost in the map. So I'm hoping that they, like, as they improve upon the UI and stuff, they'll add like more objective markers and things like that. So
where do you stand on VR, and is that the kind of thing that you would feel, it seems you feel pretty strongly about it, are you like, is a system seller, or maybe not going that far, it's a killer app?
I would say it's a killer app, if not a system seller. I like these kind of different ways of playing games is what makes VR so great, right? The VR experience that I had playing this was kind of, it's what you're looking for. You're like, Modern Warfare is kind of the same. Gears is kind of the same. Like, this is a shooter that does something completely different and controls completely different and feels completely different. I'd say it's definitely a killer app for the VR. It's not doing anything like super original as far as like the shooting. Like I said, like the 45 degree movement is not something new. I do realize that when I'm in the heat of combat, I accidentally will tap the right stick to move my gun and like turn myself instead. And so like all of a sudden my enemy it'll be right in front of me. I'll like want to just slightly move and I'll tap the right stick, and all of a sudden the enemy will be completely to my right, to my left, or, you know, so that'll take some getting used to, but I kind of got the feeling for it after playing a little bit. So,
okay. So pretty cool game. It's Stormlands, and it's a Oculus exclusive.
Yeah.
And that's it for the games we have played. I still played a little bit of Control, not a sequel, by the way, and enjoying it as well.
Oh, doing something different.
I will. I played almost through the entire Fire Emblem. It was my first, and I will finish it. It was my first Fire Emblem. So there you go. I will mention, however, as much as I praised Control, and it is a good game, fun gameplay, great setting, as I said last time, I'm enjoying Borderlands 3 more. I want to return to it more. I think it feels better. So, again, everything I've said doesn't mean it's not a good game or that I don't enjoy it. All right, let's close that chapter. Apple Arcade is available for some people, and I'm one of them. I think it's most people who have iOS or iPadOS 13 or 13.1, the beta. Anyway, it's by the time you listen to this, most likely it will be available for everyone. It launches on the 19th. $5 a month. Subscribing is unbelievably easy, as it is for these kinds of Apple services, you know. But it's funny. So you subscribe, you get the list of games, press tap on a game, download, it downloads. When you launch it, it displays an Apple Arcade splash screen, and that's it. Then you're in the game. Very, very easy. The service costs $5 a month. It's free for the first month, so I think they're going to get a lot of people to subscribe. There's going to be 100 games available at launch. They're being brought into the store a little bit more every day. I think there were like 50, 70 when I first tried it. But the most important question for this audience especially is, should you subscribe? And I think for a lot of people, it's gonna be a yes. Mostly, even though you already have a bunch of subscriptions and you don't want any more, and I know a lot of people are sick of it already, blah, blah, blah. Okay, yes, I get that. But $5 a month, subscribing at least for what? All right. The games that you're getting are not typical mobile games. They don't have microtransactions at all. They're full price quote-unquote games. Of course, you're not paying the full price for them. And some of them are pretty interesting. And some of them are also available. Some of them are exclusive. Some of them are mobile exclusive. So they are available on consoles or on PC, but not on Android, essentially, is what that means. And on those platforms, those other platforms, they're like $15-$20. And for $5, you get access to all of them. A couple of games that I have installed and I'll say very quickly. Sayonara Wild Hearts, which was presented, was it at Gamescom? I can't remember.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's essentially a rhythm run game. I've played a little bit. It's not as different/fun as I would have hoped, but it looks amazing and it might open up later. Oceanhorn 2 is a kind of a Zelda type thing, pretty well regarded. Hot Lava, all right, that one is not one you'll be getting the game for. There's the service for Exit the Gungeon, which is kind of another game in the Enter the Gungeon series, which does really interesting stuff with the control schemes. So if you're playing on a touchscreen, it auto-aims and auto-shoots. So it kind of makes it a lot easier to play. If you connect a controller, you can connect with the latest version of the OSs. You can connect a PS4 or Xbox One controller. If you connect that, then you will actually have a twin stick type thing and have to shoot the stuff that you need to kill. And I really like the idea of actually making different difficulties through different control schemes, because inherently touch controls are more difficult / more annoying / you're using them when you're in the subway or whatever, and you want something a little bit more mindless, a little bit, but it's still challenging and it's still fun playing it with touch controls, because you don't replicate everything you do with the controller one-to-one. And I think that is a very innovative way of thinking about it, and it might partly at least solve the issue of finding a control scheme that works with touch controls alone, or even touch controls and controllers, because of course Apple Arcade is available on iOS devices, iPads, Apple TVs with the when the new OS launches, and Macs when the new OS launches. So on some of those, you're going to be playing with controllers, obviously. That's really interesting. There's Skate City, which is a skating game. If you like that, it's really interesting. But overall, the reason I'm saying it might be interesting to many of the people listening is that this finally feels like the kind of games that we would like to have on mobile, but couldn't because the business model was dictating the type of games that would be successful. And right. I'm not saying that the service will be great on the long term. I don't know what will happen. I can't say with confidence that this is it, guys. This is the games we want on mobile and we're going to love them. I don't know. Maybe in 6 months we'll be tired of it and go back to our Switches and actual, you know, core games. But it feels very different from what mobile has been until now. And that is, I think, what they were going for. And I'm talking about us core gamers. There's a whole other discussion to be had for mobile gamers and for families, you know, family-friendly games, types of stuff like that. But for us, it's very intriguing. So if you have a device that can run it, especially a mobile device, I'd recommend you give it a try. Are you on iOS, Ed?
Or? Yeah, of course. I actually just subscribed as you were talking. So.
Oh, nice. are you running the iOS beta, the yeah. iOS 13? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I hope you enjoy it.
About to get on a plane this afternoon, so I will download a couple of games to play for that. So.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, you download them, and of course you can play them without being connected. Exit the Gungeon. It's pretty fun. All right, on to the news. Quick mention, Borderlands 3 has had double the lifetime peak concurrency that it had on Borderlands 2, and it's an Epic, we're talking about PC version, it's an Epic Game Store exclusive. There's lots of points of data that show that games on the Epic Game Store are doing very well, which has led Ian Boudreau, a journalist, to go on a little rant on Twitter saying, you know, the boycott BS that we're hearing about the Epic Game Store, well, it's BS. And I'm sure there's a few, whatever, 1,000 people who are really angry, but I think we need to pay attention to how much attention we're paying to those people making so much noise. In that way, like, there are people who have complaints about the store which are reasonable and voicing them reasonably, but the people going like, rah, boycott, we stop, it feels like there's a lot of them and like it's an actual movement. The numbers are showing that it is not, like, not at all.
Yeah.
which is going to the thread is very interesting, by the way. He mentions how pro-consumer the Epic Game Store actually is, which a lot of people don't understand, and anti-workers Epic is, which there has been a couple of articles written, and those are concerns which are linked to one another, but of course the angry voices of the internet are getting this completely wrong. Completely wrong. Anyway, they will have another opportunity to scream about stuff because Rockstar is launching its launcher. Giving away GTA San Andreas, and yet another launcher that you're going to have to download and get. Probably this is a prelude to the announcement of a Red Dead Redemption 2 on PC, I would suppose, right? I would guess.
Hope, yeah. And maybe even one on PC. I don't know how possible that one's going to be, but, you know.
Good point. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be available on Steam and on the Rockstar launcher. I would guess not, because they don't want to give 30% or, you know, however much it is to Valve. That's why they're doing this to begin with. And they don't, I mean, they can, it helps to help Valve, but Rockstar doesn't need Valve to get people to install the games. So, yet another launcher. I look forward to the anger of the internet. and maybe look forward to not paying attention to it all that much. Ring Fit Adventure. Have you seen this thing?
Yeah, this is interesting.
So it was teased last week or 2 weeks ago and revealed this week, last week. It's essentially a ring, Pilates, I've learned, a ring. It's actually the same kind of strength and tension and form, where you insert a Joy-Con and then you strap a Joy-Con to your leg and then you do some kind of fitness. And I have two things to say about this whole thing. First, the video that they are showcasing this in is like, it's mesmerizing.
Hilarious.
It's they are so happy about this thing and so preppy, like it feels like it's an animated.
People are making fun of the guy in the video for being like not a real person.
and you know that it was like the Nintendo communications person in the production seat at the shooting going like, no, smile more, you have to be happy. And you're like, and the woman running in place is motionless but like not breaking a sweat at all, and she runs like she must be one of the biggest athletes I've ever seen. Like she's but she looks like nothing because she's making it feel like it's everyone can do that. It's very well done, hypnotizing. It was, I don't know, it was weird. Anyway, the game itself, the system looks really fun because it really is putting much more of a game into fitness than I feel has been before. Even in Wii Fit and the likes, it felt like it was like, oh, now you move in that position and hold it. And that was kind of the quote-unquote game. Here, it's a little bit more like a runner, or you're grabbing a thing, right? And punching. Yeah. What did you think? Are you interested?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a cool game to get, and at least like my wife likes working out and stuff like that. So like maybe as like kind of an introductory seed into playing more of the Switch, get her into it. But yeah, it seems cool. I mean, like, why not? Why not give it a shot? You know?
Yeah. I think I'm in the same boat ish. I started working out a little bit, just a bit, but maybe that could be a fun way of doing it as well. Why not? Gamify everything. EA is testing its cloud gaming service, which led me to remember, kind of, that they have a cloud gaming service that they announced a year ago. I had completely forgotten about this. Completely. So it's the test is beginning shortly, but EA is getting into the streaming games game as well. And Ubisoft has launched, I can't remember if we talked about this last time, but they've launched their subscription service to very little fanfare, which I think will change once one of the big Ubisoft games comes out. And that's going to be interesting. We'll discuss it then. And also with the Stadia link, I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to talk about this again. Discord is not selling games anymore.
Yeah, that was interesting.
You know, I think they had an opportunity to succeed. I probably said that at the time as well. They just started this. They didn't have the, I guess, marketing oomph behind it to make it succeed. Yeah. And also, Epic entered the arena.
Yeah,
and everyone
exactly.
has their launcher too now. And we have the subscription. There's kind of a subscription-y thing with Nitro, but and we also have the subscription showing up. So, you know, it's funny how much that market has shifted in the past 18 months. It's been significantly transformed. When Discord was conceiving their store, I think they were seeing the opportunity that existed. And now the market is that used to be Steam only is super full. So, I mean, Discord is still doing well, so I'm sure they'll be okay.
Yeah.
Are you looking forward to The Last of Us Part 2, Ed?
Of course, dude. How could I not be?
That is the right answer. Had you not answered that, I can't answer to what I would have been doing. Next week, we're getting a press event for The Last of Us Part 2, where it is extraordinarily likely will get a release date.
Yep.
More gameplay, etc., more details, but release date. Do you want to take bets on what the release date will be?
I really hope it's not next fall. No.
Hmm. I think they wanted it to be early.
They wanted it to be like February, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would say February 20th.
Okay.
We'll see if that happens. Wait,
what I'm gonna is go the later 20th? Than that.
Wait, it should be probably a Friday, right?
No.
Or
I mean,
Thursday.
20th is a Thursday. Thursday. They're gonna release that on Tuesday, right? Like
maybe.
I don't know. Like Nintendo is the Friday.
Okay. All right. So Tuesday. So the 18th. February 18th. Okay. Maybe.
I'm gonna go later.
So the reason I think they're not gonna go later is that they will probably have a PlayStation 5 coming out later in the year.
Or, yeah, when I say I'm playing over under rules with later, like I'm saying like maybe March.
Okay.
Or like maybe they have released a couple of high profile. They released God of War in like April, right? So
that's
like
true.
That seems to be a good time for them.
Maybe they were targeting February and then they moved it to March or April. Okay, that works. Anthem is on EA Access now. So if you're subscribed to EA Access,
yay,
you can play Anthem. I don't know what to make of what they're doing with Anthem. Are they working on it really hard in secret? They posted a very, not cryptic, but light update post, blog post a few days ago. And it was like, yeah, we have big things, ambitions, and I guess that really? Game is going to have a relaunch, but it's way more under the radar than it. I think it's going to be a complete relaunch where, I don't know, do you need to buy it again? It's so difficult to.
I hope it does well.
I hope so too. I'm just wondering how EA can make it worth working on it, because they sold it fairly well already.
Yeah,
I think financially they could just forget about it. You know, they sold pretty well. It would require a lot of money to, to significantly improve it. But then, what do you do? Do you sell an expansion and sell that expansion to people who have already paid the base game but not played because it sucked at launch? Do you make it?
That's kind of what Destiny did, right? Like, I know you loved the original version of Destiny, but when Taken King came out, they brought a bunch of people in, brought a bunch of new people in, and they got people in that way, and then they really just need positive buzz to come out of the expansion, right?
I think comparing Destiny to Anthem is doing an incredible disservice to what Destiny was at launch. It certainly had problems, but it wasn't as, you know, it had big problems, of course. I've said this many times. Anthem was broken at an incredibly deep design structure level, on top of the moment-to-moment gameplay issues. So it's not this. I think there has been no situation similar to what Anthem has done. There have been games that have come out broken in the history of the gaming industry, of course.
Yeah.
But like Anthem, I don't. And, I, you know, there will be three people who love Anthem to this day in the audience who will take issue with what I'm saying. But I think I would stand by those. Give me another example of a high-profile game. It doesn't have to be as high-profile as Anthem, which was probably the highest of high profiles we've seen. You know, it wasn't that, like, top tier. That did so poorly game-wise. I don't think there are many of them. Broken games, yes. But in all of them, you had some good elements and some people who got something out of them, including Destiny, which was very broken. And anyway, well, we're not going to redo the conversation about Destiny, but there's a lot of people who have gotten, and just a testament to the fact that the aspects of Destiny that worked, the community stayed in the game until it was quote unquote fixed with Taken King. The community kept playing. I have a feeling that the community in Anthem is not playing anymore. It's like, what, 6 months since the game launched? And that speaks to how broken structurally the game was. If you're still playing it, awesome. Go for it. But I think you're in the minority, the very, very small minority.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo World is opening. Do you want a Nintendo-themed theme park?
Yeah, of course.
There you go. Universal Studios in Japan for a start. And it's going to come to other parts of the world in the future. I'm not a big theme park person, so I don't know if that's for me. But I'm super negative today, aren't I? but if you enjoy that, then go for it. I'm going to Japan in the fall. Oh, actually, you know what? I'm going to amend what I said about Last of Us. The release date will very likely be the day before I leave for Japan. That is what it's going to be. So I'm going to Japan. I don't think it will be open yet. And even if it is, I won't go, but maybe I could. So you want to go to Super Nintendo World?
Yeah, why not? Just seems like a fun experience, you know?
Yeah, I'd like to go as well.
I mean, Nintendo is like my Disney, right? Like everyone loves Disney so much, and Nintendo's kind of like that for me. So,
Yeah, I when my kid will be a little bit older, let's put it like that. I would want him to want to go to Super Nintendo World,
mm-hmm.
and I will be very disappointed if he doesn't. All right, that's got to be it for this episode. Anything to add, Ed? Anything I missed? I don't think so.
No, we covered pretty much everything. So
cool. Why don't you tell us where we can find you on the internet?
Yeah, sure. You can follow me on Twitter at @Adesis. I am involved with another podcast called 4Player Podcast at 4playernetwork.com. Last night, actually, we covered every single game that I played at PAX, and we talked about every single one of them. So that podcast should be coming up on the feed shortly. So subscribe if you're interested in hearing more about PAX other than just Stormlands. So
excellent.
I look forward to that.
Cool. Thank you very much. I am Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can find this show at frenchspin.com. Come let me know if you think I said dumb things or clever things or if I made sense in any way. I doubt myself all the time, so I enjoy people telling me that maybe I'm not entirely wrong. If you that is completely different, but I also do a show called The Phileas Club, and we just did an episode on China in Africa, and I'm sure everyone has heard that China is doing lots of stuff in Africa, but if you wonder what exactly that is, like you want to get informed a little bit, I had two amazing guests who told us about what they're doing, what people think about this there, and it was really informative. Go check it out, Phileas Club, Phileas, or just go to frenchspin.com and you'll have a link to the RSS feed. And keep informed in that way. It's a fun show. We talk about serious topics, and it's very casual, very fun. I think you will enjoy it. The Phileas Club at frenchspin.com. That's going to be it. We will be back in a couple of weeks for another episode. Thank you, Ed, and thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye.